Okay, let's call this meeting to order. First, as we're starting, I'd like to welcome all of you to the Commission on Aging meeting. We have a set sort of agenda that we go through before we have our speaker, and we're so glad to see all of you here today and hope you'll join us every month. We have such an incredible slate of speakers that are coming on during the rest of the course of the spring and the summer. It's just through the fall. It's fantastic. Can't wait for today's speaker, but I'm going to have to. First of all, is there a motion for approval of the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I'm going to pass on the chair report. Let's go to the vice chair report, Bob.
Okay, thank you. At our February meeting, several members of the audience presented policy-type comments regarding housing issues. They were recorded in our minutes of the meeting. Three of the issues caught my attention. The first one was configuring lot sizes to be wider than deeper. The second was the elevator license requirement for stair chair lifts. And finally, lot sizes again, 10 houses per acre rather than 6 per acre. Although the Clark County Commission on Aging bylaws do not specifically charge the commission to present policy recommendations to the Board of County Councilors, the bylaws do indicate responsibilities for general advocacy, including advising, reviewing, reporting to the Board of Councilors on issues related to county aging, aging community. Therefore, it is appropriate for the Commission to study and prepare policy recommendations to the Board of Councilors on issues related to county aging readiness plan. As an aside, it makes sense to me that the Commission form a government affairs committee. We don't have such a body now. That committee would monitor governmental policies at the county, city, state, and report the findings, suggest policy proposals for consideration by the commission, executive committee, and subsequently the 9-member commission. If the commission votes to advocate policies, the commission would present those recommendations to the county director,
manager,
for his review, and if he chooses, submits the recommendations on to the Board of County Councilors.
Any discussion about that?
I think that's some good work you did, Bob, and I think these policy recommendations that you distilled from our February meeting will probably be picking up some from our March, April, and all the rest of the meetings through the year. And at some point, as we get closer to the end of the year, we might want to move formalize those and pass those recommendations on to the county manager. Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah, either that or pass them on to the housing committee now for at some point for their review and then
for
back to
discussion.
Us.
Other comments?
And so when you start bringing up the size of lots and
can you speak into your mic?
Really? When you start bringing up the size of lots and all that, that really starts getting into code.
Oh yes.
You know,
yes.
And so we can make recommendations for looking into certain code changes, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what the housing committee could take up.
Right.
Once we get to that point, after we get.
Well, I was impressed by the people who presented these issues as being pretty professional, and I think that they were legitimate concerns. But I think we need to look at them and then make any recommendations we want to forward.
I think all three of the ones that you distilled, Bob, are things that we should be talking about immediately, because one of them has to do with single-story houses and what that means. Yeah. And especially for people who age, the thing with the stair chair lifts is a huge issue if people are going to be able to remain in their houses. And the idea of 10 houses per acre opens up the possibility of tiny houses. And there was that story in the paper this morning about that, and it's something that absolutely needs to be addressed going forward. So I'm with you. I think it's great.
And the idea of that, some of that does go and deal also, like with the elevator whole thing. That's a state-regulated guidelines, I believe. You know, and so we would be then going. We'd be talking to the state.
Oh yes.
Then about, hey, you know, maybe we need to adjust or do something with those kinds.
Yeah, I have no trouble talking to the state or the federal government.
Neither do I.
The idea of creating a committee for studying these issues, I think, is something we can talk about later, too.
Okay.
Yeah, let's talk about that at the next executive committee and then bring it back to the board meeting. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Bob.
That's my stuff. Go ahead.
Okay. Marjorie, Communications Committee.
Now, each of you have the summary I've done to date, or highlights to date, from the speakers we've had, the ones in January and February. And what I would like each of you to do following the meeting is to email what you think are the highlights, were to you the most two or three that were most important. And part of that, too, is, and I'm glad we have members of the public here tonight, because that's a big part of who we want to hear from when we have our experts come in and talk to us from their point of view, so that we can use examples that you all raise as we become more and more of an advocate for housing and any other issues. So we welcome your participation.
Thank you, Marjorie. Chuck, Treasury Report.
Yeah, as of today, we have $889.33 in the bank and holding.
Okay, that was good. That was quick. do you have anything? Oh, let's our impact, Karen.
Our impact, our membership for our impact is now 100. Plus.
Describe what that is really quickly.
And our impact is the Clark County Time Bank, and any member of Clark County is eligible to join, and we would love to have all of you take a look at it. A time bank is a program whereby if you become a member, you post the needs that you have. You need someone to help you rake the leaves off your lawn or help you paint a bedroom, whatever. And in turn, you are also obligated to look at the needs that others have posted and do the best you can to help to satisfy the needs of other members of the time bank. So the currency of time bank is never money, it's always time. And if it's going to take someone from the time bank 2 hours to rake my leaves, then I must take 2 hours out of my time bank account and give it to the person who's going to be helping me with that particular item. So take a look at it, www.ourhourimpact.org. That is our website, and you can join there. We'd love to have you all. It's a wonderful program. We started the program in May, so we had hoped to have perhaps 100 people by our first birthday. And we are ahead of schedule. Wahoo! So we're really happy about that.
Thank you very much, Karen. Allie, Public Health Advisory Council update.
Yeah, I met with the Public Health Advisory Council, and they are very interested in building a partnership with us on any initiatives. We just had the sodium reduction grant that we wrote a letter for and support, so they're willing to do similar things with us. And I plan to touch base with them on a monthly basis after our meetings, just to make sure we're on the same page. So it went very well.
Thank you. Chuck, Universal Green Design, any update on that?
Pardon?
universal green design.
No. Well, the only thing I'd like to say is, wow, to the audience that we have today, this is fantastic. This is what we've been hoping that we would start to get this kind of a response with what we're putting together. And as Bill mentioned, every month we have a speaker coming in to talk on a different issue. And this whole housing thing is a very complicated, when you really start kind of peeling the onion, so to speak, it is a very complicated issue. Especially whenever we're looking at aging in place and what all of that takes in our community today. So we have a great lineup of speakers that are coming in every month, and some of it is going to be just a little bit out of the box, or I think Clark County. To get us to be thinking a little bit about the issue that is in front of us, which is us aging here in Clark County and being successful at doing that.
Okay, and for Council for the Homeless update, we're going to be having an update on that shortly with a speaker coming in. So. I'll just leave it at that.
Is the speaker in April?
It just could be, yeah. I think it's Andy Silbert. I think he's sitting in the front row. You want to stand and wave, Andy, so they know who you are? This is Andy Silbert, who is the director of the Council for the Homeless, who is one of the coolest guys on the planet, and he really is. And if you don't come and listen to what he has to say, you're going to miss something really great. Love this guy.
There's a right. Free advertisement.
No. Don't make him better than this. And I'm expecting that payment afterwards. Okay, let's shift gears for what you came for today, and I'm really excited to introduce to you Patrick Rodine and doctor and nurse and both. He's both an RN critical care nurse, and that's where he's hung his hat for decades. But he's also got a PhD in environmental gerontology. He is a person who had probably thousands of hours of expertise by the time he was a teenager, having crawled around on the floor of his grandma's nursing home as a tiny little guy, and taking in already care and love and attention to people who were just a whole lot older than he was. Patrick is the recipient of the Lloydina Grimes Award for Excellence in Nursing from Linfield. I'm a Willamette guy. Linfield College School of Nursing, and a member of Kappa Delta Phi International Honor Society. He's a certified aging in place specialist, a member of the Oregon Nurse Association, Oregon Gerontological Association, American Society on Aging, National Aging in Place Council, and he is just an amazing guy. Has a website that's agingInPlace.com that I would highly commend to you. I think that's sort of enough. Let's welcome Patrick.
I'm going to second a couple of things that Chuck just said. Wow, this is a great turnout. And there's all different ages, which is fantastic. Can you all hear me okay? Back there? Okay. So thank you very much for coming. I really appreciate it. And also, let's give a hand to this commission, really, honestly. They're doing some very heavy lifting here. They're making Clark County a better place for all of us to grow old in. And I just want to congratulate you, because you guys are so far ahead of the game, you have no idea, really, around the country. They're doing great things here. Let's see, I want to start with some housekeeping first. But everybody can hear me, is that correct? We're doing okay there? Okay. So I only get about 30 minutes, and I've got a lot of content that I want to get across in 30 minutes. So what I want to ask you to do is to hold your questions till the end. And also, if you have a cell phone that's on, can you turn that off? And maybe put it on buzzer just for your neighbor's sake. That'd be terrific. And you should have handouts. Now, the main handout is going to be an outline of what I'm going to talk about. And any of the major points that I talk about, I'm going to reference there. So if there isn't enough time to talk about it here, you can follow that reference tree, and that's something Bill likes to do. You can look things up, and you can always contact me. I have a business card back there. I'm happy to talk with any of you, so please let me know. There's another handout there about aging in place. It's a simple primer. That's a really good outline about how to retrofit your home for aging in place, written by an occupational therapist I'll talk a little bit about. And also, there's a free report there that I was getting off my website for years, and it's very popular, had over 1,700 downloads. It's called The 8 Elements of a Home in High Demand for an Aging Population. And that's probably worth the price of admission. It's a really, I think you're going to find that information interesting, but it's something you should really consider for the future. So, I guess that's all the housekeeping here, so let's just jump right into this. So the title of this talk is, what does aging in place mean? And then the second part is, how can it be achieved? So I'm going to begin the talk by asking you a question. I may stray away from this. I'm not really good with podiums, but let me ask you a question. How many of you already know what aging in place means? Can I see a show of hands? Anybody? Show of hands? Okay. What is your name?
Oh.
Nicole. Yes. Can you tell us what aging in place means to you?
It would mean living in your own home for the rest of your life and becoming an adult.
You probably didn't hear that. She said living in your own home for the rest of your life and bringing in people to help you do that. That is perfect. Why aren't you living this? That's like a really good, perfect definition. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to begin the first question, what does aging in place mean? Again, and talk about what it actually is not. I love this image. A lot of people try to talk about aging in place. Essentially, they're trying to limit the concept of place as a container. Now, when we talk about our homes have all the things that delight and support our senses. That's where we create memories. They're full of meaningful objects. The home's really a more dynamic place than just four walls, a container. But also, it's more inclusive. Now, a couple weeks ago, Alan De La Torre, who's one of the country's leading experts on aging in place, talked about two things, aging in community, which is aging in place, and age-friendly cities, which is also aging in place. So we're trying to make the boundaries of aging in place more expansive, and I would suggest their own Chuck Fryer here and his friend and my new friend, John Williams, are expanding aging in place out into the great outdoors. I'm an Oregonian. Oregon and the outdoors of the Pacific Northwest is part of my home. So I consider that part of aging in place. So what we're trying to do is expand the boundaries of aging in place. So let's start with a working definition here today, though. And the CDC has a pretty decent one. It says, aging in place is the ability to live in one's own home and community safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age, income, or ability level. That's a pretty good working definition. I run across this one quite frequently in the literature. The only caveat I have with this one, I take out the word independently, and I would put in interdependently. Because, as you will find out, aging in place is really, really difficult to do on your own. It's a team sport. And that gets into something that I like to call the aging in place paradox. Now, not a lot of people talk about this, but if you want to be more independent, you're really going to have to be more interdependent. And that doesn't seem right on the surface. But let me show you what I'm talking about here. And if you've got a list of these in your handout, when I mean interdependent, you're going to have support systems that are going to need to be in place to really do this successfully. I'm going to talk about 8 of them. You can probably think of some on your own. But I want to go through these real quick. This isn't going to be the focus of our talk today. People are going to talk about this, other speakers in this series. Each one of these could be a day in itself. But I'm going to go through these real quick. And let's start with the first. I love this one. The term is called being well-daughtered. Now, this really gets into something called informal care. And we know statistically who the caregivers are. So if you're well-daughtered, that is, you have daughters, you're more likely to have informal care. And they call it informal because you're not getting paid for it. So that's number one. The next one is something called affordable and accessible housing. This is crucial. The next is transportation that's reliable. Reliable is the key there. The fourth one is work, education, and volunteer opportunities. The fifth is access to health care providers. And not just medical staff, I'm talking about non-medical in-home care as well. And number six is participation in church, civic, and cultural events. And number seven is intergenerational contacts, which is really important. And last, supportive technology. And that's going to be a part of the speaker series as well. So those things need to be in place for the most part to be successful at this. And I have a disclaimer that I want to talk about right up front. I have a bias, and my bias is pro-aging in place whenever possible. And all of us know or have a relative where we know it's not possible. So it's not always possible. What I want to do, and I wish I had more time to do this, but in your handout, you will see a reference to a book there called Aging in the Right Place. That's by Professor Stephen Golance. He's one of the leading academics in this area of aging in place. And he talks about, it's a real sober account of the aging in place that we're talking about here, sort of single family homes. So he brings up a lot of really good arguments. I can't disagree with anything the professor says. I agree with all of it. And I'm going to talk about a few of those in just a few minutes. But I'm still pro-aging in place. And you're going to find out why in just a few minutes. Four of the most profound words that were ever written or spoken on this topic of aging in place were done so by Laura Carstensen. She's the founder of the Stanford Center on Longevity. And she said this: our environments presume you.
Wow.
Isn't that good? She nailed it in four words. Most of the housing stocks that we live in, and particularly elderly people live in, were built in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, particularly the 50s. When the veterans were coming back from World War II, you had 195-pound strapping GI who was raising a family, and they built these suburbs all over America. They never dreamed that these same people were going to be staying in these houses and getting old. People supposedly weren't living much past 65. And if they did, they went to Sun City, Del Webb, or Florida, South Florida. Jonathan Winters called that God's waiting room. But that's not the model we're finding out, particularly not for baby boomers. Nobody I know is going to Del Webb. So the trouble is, most of us live in housing that doesn't fit us. Alan talked about this. It's called Peter Pan housing. Housing for people who think they're never going to grow old. And this is myself included. I always fear somebody's going to ask me about my house. It has five levels, built 1930. So there you go, folks. So a few of us are planning for this. And Chuck asked why. Aging in place is still kind of a crisis vibe. And I call it a crisis vibe because nobody's doing anything about it until somebody falls. Yeah. Then they start doing something about it. There's a crisis. You make really bad decisions in crisis. So few of us are planning ahead. Question is why? We talked about gerontophobia, fear of aging. That's part of it. The how-to part of this talk, that information is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. Whenever we talk about aging in place, it always starts to be around the built environment. The Washington Post just had an article on it. The New York Times is talking about it. Bernie Sanders mentioned it in one of his political speeches recently. The built environment to me is really the three R's: rails, ramps, and raised toilet seats. This stuff.
Ooh, that's good.
It is important. Okay.
That's good.
I like that. Good. Okay. So this is important. The built environment is a huge part of this. In your handout, you'll see home care
a magazine, there's an article there called Aging in Place, Home Modifications by Kay Kosh. Now, Kay is an occupational therapist, and these are the people that you want coming into your house to take a look around and do an assessment, because they do this for a living. They're very good at it. But here's my issue with the how-to. It's necessary information, but it may not be sufficient to change behavior. This is where we're going to color outside the box a little bit, Chuck mentioned about. I like the how-to. The rest of this talk is going to be why-to. And the reason I'm doing this is any good architect will tell you that things begin first in the mind and then in the physical. So we're going to start with the mind. How many of you have ever heard of Dr. Bill Thomas? Bill Thomas. Bill Thomas is a geriatrician. He's an MD. And Bill has a need to perform. He's actually a performer, isn't he? He's just wonderful. He did something called the Eden Alternative. Look him up on your reference list there. But the thing that I really want you to look up is a YouTube talk he gave. And I met him last year in Portland and talked to him about this, because this, I watched this YouTube and it changed my life. It's called The Upside Risk and the Elderly. I'm going to give you the gist of it right here. He said, when we think about the elderly and living independently, we have a tendency to first think about risk and what's going to go wrong. Something bad is going to happen. And the aging in place critics, like Professor Boland, they'll talk about falls that occur in the home. The NIH says 6 out of 10 falls people over the age of 65 happen at home. Decaying housing stocks that we talked about, these houses that were built in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, including mine, maybe some of you have seen the money pit, they're falling apart. The cost of in-home care is going up. Lack of informal caregivers. Many people aren't well-daughtered. I know a lot of baby boomer women that don't have children, and so they're facing this alone, essentially. Inner city crime is a big problem for the elderly that are living in inner city areas. And the suburbs, 70% of baby boomers are going to be living in the suburbs and rurally. This has been called the architecture of isolation. It's a disaster, and it's just offshore brewing. We're not doing anything about it yet, but it's also an opportunity. So yes, aging in place is really risky. Bill Thomas said this. He said, you know, if we look at the definition of risk, risk really means an outcome that's different than expected. So when you look at the definition of risk in that way, there's two sides. The first side is the one we always think about. It's a knee-jerk one. What's the probability that the outcome is actually going to be worse than expected? That's the downside of risk. There's another side. What's the probability that the outcome is actually going to be better than expected? That's the upside of risk. Dr. Thomas said this, we're obsessed with the downside of risk when it comes to seniors, causing us to take away the upside risk for elders. No other part of the life cycle is this allowed, and it shouldn't be allowed in elderhood either. A normal life is a balance between downside risk and upside risk, and I can't agree more with Dr. Thomas. That's a very important point. Right now, I want to show you my strongest argument for aging in place and why it's worth the risk. The aging brain. This is the greatest barrier to successful aging and the most feared barrier to successful aging. In the 1960s at UC Berkeley, there was a young, beautiful neuroanatomist named Marion Diamond, and she was doing groundbreaking research with rats. She was manipulating their environments and finding that she was actually able to change the architecture of their brains through this manipulation. Never been done before, always been theorized. Here's a summary of her key findings, and this is the short version. Impoverished environments cause brain shrinkage. Enriched environments cause brain growth. And when I talk about tissue, what we're talking about, and this is, you've heard this now, it's out there, dendritic connections. Dendrites are the branches that connect neurons or brain cells to one another that send impulses. When they did an autopsy of Einstein's brain, they said there were parts of his brain that looked like a dendritic forest, was the word that they used. So the places that this was happening, and neurons as well, so new brain cells as well, they call it neurogenesis, it was happening in the cerebrum, the large part of the brain associated with learning, and deep in the hippocampus, the area associated with memory. Two keys. The one key was novelty, and the other key was challenge. And together, she called these collectively environmental complexity. She said this, "We can now safely say that the basic concept of brain changes in response to environment hold true for a wide variety of animals and humans." Marion Diamond in 2001. Here's take-home message number one. Custodial environments, nursing homes, long-term care, and assisted living facilities, these are all built for caregiver efficiency. I've worked in them, I know. Efficiency means standardization and routine. They have to be. Standardization and routine are the death of novelty and challenge. You see what I'm getting? I want to give you a visual just so you can go home and plant this in your brain. These are the dendritic connections. This is your brain on novelty and complexity. This is your brain on standardization and routine. One more time. Novelty and complexity, standardization and routine.
Well.
I'm going to give you a little story. Years ago, I was asked to speak at Courtyard Plaza in Portland, big continuing care facility, one of the biggest. And the two guys that brought me in were in their early 70s. And I came in and we sat down around the table in a beautiful, elegant dining room. And we talked about what they wanted me to speak about. And then at the end of it, I looked at the guys, and one of them, interestingly enough, was the father of a geriatrician that I'd worked with. And what got him a ticket to Courtyard Plaza was his wife did all the domestics. She passed away. He didn't know how to cook or clean, literally. And that, I mean, it sounds crazy to young people, but that was the generation. She did all of that. But he did the other stuff, mowing lawns and fixing things and around the house, but he didn't know how to cook and clean. So that landed him in a continuing care facility. So we're sitting there, and we're talking, and I look around these guys, and there's a sea of blue-haired ladies. And these two guys. And I said, "So how do you guys like it here?" And this guy leaned back in his chair, folded his arms, and I will never forget this. He said, "We don't have to cook. We don't have to clean. We don't have to do anything." From across the table, I could hear his dendrites going from this to this. Literally. Take home message number two. Those traditional burdens of home ownership that are just a pain in the you know what, those may actually be neuroprotective. Let me unpack this a little bit. Environmental gerontologists have a concept that they call environmental press. This gets a little complicated, so I'm going to do a simpler version here. But environmental press are the forces in the environment that, together with individual need, evoke a response. Let me translate that into English. All of us have dealt with, at one time or another, a clogged sink, right? I just did it 2 weeks ago. So when you have a clogged sink, you either have to fix it yourself, which is problem solving, or you gotta hire a professional, which is also problem solving, actually. These are both forms of environmental press. They're forces in the nature that you have to stand up and deal with. It's also what Mary Dyckman called environmental complexity. I'm going to unpack this a little further. So this is the model that we use, and it's called the environmental press model. It's been around since the 70s. And what we've got here is this is essentially about adaptation. Essentially about adaptation. When I talk about this, put yourself in mind. Put yourself in driver's seat here. When I mentioned a person, think of yourself here now. So there's two things that we look at with this model. Number one is the person, so think of yourself, the person's competence. And what we're talking about with competence is their ability to deal with essentially the clogged sink. And that's on the y-axis here. So the competence is rated from low to high. Okay? On the x-axis here, we have the environmental press. This is actually the clogged sink. And it goes from weak to strong. I'm going to go through these other components here real quick, and then I'll make some sense out of this. So here we have too little environmental press, and you get negative and maladaptive behavior if you're here. And this is a margin transition where you're moving into a zone of maximum comfort. This is support. Here's the adaptation level in the middle. Over here, we get into the zone of maximum performance and stimulation. And then there's a transition margin here. And then we get over to a negative effect here because there's too much environmental press, too many clogged drains. So it goes either way. So let's go back to the Courtyard Plaza guy for a minute. Let's say it's the first month of the first year and he's just moved in. And a month ago, he was actually living on his own. His wife had passed away, but he was living on his own. Now he's in Courtyard Plaza. So his competence is pretty good still. It's not real high because he's there, but it's not real low either because a month ago he was still environmental pressing at home. And long-term care facilities, they're built for support and comfort, right? So let's say we take the access here and come over, and then we pull up the access here. He's about in this area here, his first month, first year in Courtyard Plaza. He's getting support. Let's fast forward about 3 years from now. He gets up in the morning every day, goes down and has breakfast, comes back to his room, shuts the door, turns on the TV, falls asleep on the TV. Wakes up in time for lunch, goes down and has lunch, goes back up, turns on the TV, falls asleep on the TV until dinner time. Then he goes back down, has dinner, and then goes back to his room, turns on the TV, watches the evening news, falls asleep, and does the same thing day in and day out. Over time, what's going to happen is his competence is going to get lower and lower. They're going to compensate at the facility by getting less and less environmental press. Now you start getting in this area where the X and Y axis are in the maladaptive behavior. That's the zone of this. Now, the thing that I want you to know about aging in place is it is about adaptation. This can go the other direction. Let's do another scenario. Let's say his niece, who lives in New York City, comes to visit, favorite niece, and she says, "Uncle, what's happened to you? I mean, he's just not the same guy." So she says, I'm springing this, get out of here. She takes him back to New York City to live in her apartment. Now you got a little bit different scenario. There's a thing called transfer trauma. When you move somebody into a new environment, you're gonna get a dip for a while. So his competence goes even lower, and he's in the heart of Manhattan. There's 30-year-olds in this room right now that struggle with downtown New York City in Manhattan. So for a while, he's over here. And she's thinking, wow, what did I do? He's got worse. She says, you know, Uncle, I want you to come down and have lunch with me. So in the basement of this building is a cafeteria. She goes down, brings him down there, and they have lunch together. He says hello to the doorman. She does this for a couple of weeks, and she starts having breakfast, bringing it down for breakfast. He gets to know the cook behind the counter that's slinging the hash. He starts reading the New York Times. there's a couple of old ladies there that are kind of eyeballing it. Because the sex ratio, you know, there aren't a lot of single guys, so they get to know him a little bit. Now he's carrying on conversations, reading the New York Times. They invite him to come to their little group, and in the afternoons, they're going and watching Broadway plays. A few months of this, pretty soon, his confidence starts to rise a little bit. New York City is not such a bad place. He's getting in, if you cross over here and up here, now you're starting to get into stimulation. You see how this can actually go backwards? I want to give you a different scenario with a young person here. Let's say there's somebody here that's 40, and you're an avid bicyclist. And your confidence is up here. You're a world beater, right? You're up here. Environmental press, you live in Portland, so it's just, it's, you know, you're stimulated all the time. You're doing great. One day you fall off your bike and break your ankle. Now, your confidence is down a little bit physically. And that house that you lived in that was built in 1950 with all the stairs, five levels of stairs, the environmental press all of a sudden changes. You're not so confident anymore. You know, you're getting into what might be marginal here, more environmental press, and you're about here where you might need a little support. You might even dip in further into the dark zone if you don't get enough help. So you see how this thing changes? Aging in place is really challenging, and people will say, you know, should I put rails and ramps in my house? What if I do too much? What if I make it too easy to live in? Well, you have to compensate for that by finding other challenges in your life. Here's take home.
How many on time? Are you okay?
You got lots of time.
Lots of time. Okay. So the take home message number three in all of this. How many of you remember the Eagles? Glenn Frey just passed away. One of my absolute favorite songs was Lying Eyes, and this is one of my favorite lines. I say this, my wife says, you say this every week, and I do. Every form of refuge has its price. This is the price. Every form of refuge has its price. Many of the things that we blame on aging have nothing to do with getting older. So thank you.
I'm ready to take questions.
Okay, questions. I'm sure there are lots of them. Just raise your hand and they'll bring a mic over to you.
Well, the mic's coming over.
Yeah, we have questions.
So, given all you said, since we're looking specifically at policy things we might want to recommend, do you have any suggestions along that line, public policy? Should public policy be different in any way that could help?
Policy. You know what I want to do?
And I haven't talked about this in public before, but I'm going to talk about it now. And you all are sworn to secrecy on this one. But Margie, well, you know, there's a big term out right now called literacy. And people talk about health literacy, education literacy. I guess the problem with health information, and Bill, you would know this, we are awash in health information. But there's little health literacy. People are getting bombarded every night. You'll get, you know, your doctor, this and eat that. But nobody understands it enough to really follow through. So what I would like to see public policy do, and start this early, have an aging in place literacy program where we teach the very basics and start early. Because my hope is that the younger people here that are taking care of their parents, many of us are seeing our parents struggle in what's called a person-environment mismatch. And what I want to see you do is look at them struggling and go, I don't want any of this. I'm going to plan ahead. So that's what I would like. But I would like to answer your question. A government policy and aging in place literacy. Kind of like, you know, Mrs. Obama has taken on nutrition, that sort of thing.
Is there any literature on that?
No. Nobody's made that connection.
You created
it.
but it has to start at policy. Yes. It does. Okay. because people aren't doing it on their own.
Thank you.
But my whole thing was to make it compelling enough. The reason to do it is to preserve your brain. Nobody's made that connection that I know of either. That's a more compelling, it's an emotional reason. I can tell you about intellect and tell you how to do it, but on the emotional level, that's more important.
I'd like to make a comment,
yes.
And I would like to hear your thoughts on it. My mother passed away in 2008 at 101 years old. And up until probably a year before she died, she was doing really amazingly well for her age. But my comment and my concern is that, and it's for all of us, whether you're sitting in the audience and you have an elderly parent that you're concerned about now, or if you've lost your parents, then this is also for you because you're going to be experiencing the other side of the coin soon, meaning, you know, you're going to need some help yourself. People are very reluctant to ask for help, and obviously as you age, you do need support. And as an adult child of an elderly parent, if they're not asking and you're not seeing because you don't live with them, there's aging in place is great, but there's a fine line there where the balance can tip and it's no longer for you. Any comments?
That's the biggest issue, that right there. In the medical profession, we call it the white coat effect. You go in and get your blood pressure taken, and it's always high because your doctor's there. It's a sample bias. And when you go visit your folks on a holiday or something, you're seeing signs of it. But the other thing is sometimes we want to, instead of loving truth, we make true that which we love. You want to think that they're doing okay. And that's why I said this is a crisis bias. We don't do anything until the fall. And then they most likely can't return home. So I wish I knew. That's the question. I really wish I had an answer for that. I don't. I watched it in my own family, actually. And here's the funny thing. Being the content expert, nobody in my family asked me anything. My two older sisters took over, took charge. It's like I know that thing. So you got that going too.
They're the daughter.
However, you talked about starting this young, and you're not moving out of your five levels.
We are going to move out.
Are you going to?
Yeah.
You are. And then what do we do about
that? We have a house in Portland, actually, that's a little tiny house. It's like a tiny house on one level, a half a block from a bus stop. I embrace my eight elements of a home and high demand for an aging population. It has all of them. So that's where we're going.
And then what do we do about the fact that our communities are filled with these inappropriate houses?
This is a disaster. There's a lot of women are doing home sharing programs, and co-housing, which is really nice. Portland's really working on that as well. But it's a disaster. You have one person living in a huge house. There's all these spare rooms that could be used by somebody. You know, should we mix them up with college students and do a share? Tit for tat type thing. There's a lot of people that are working on this and they're doing some creative things, but that's what we're doing. We have our plans set in place to move there when the time comes. And that's the thing, nobody wants to admit that the time is coming. So,
Thank you, Patrick, so much for everything you had to say. And I have really good news. Because I have resources. There are resources in our community. First of all, there's two nonprofits here. They're volunteer groups that do things for free. First one I want to bring to your attention is, because you're talking about environmental press and competence and stimulation and health literacy, we have a group that does that. It's called CAMP. Their website is called camp.care. And what it is it's a group of doctors, nurses, and therapists who take classes around for fun and for free, they're all volunteers, and talk about and teach people about dementia, how not to get it. Fast, easy, fun classes on how not to get dementia. The second thing is you're talking about falling. flexibility and balance.
Yes.
We teach classes on flexibility and balance. So there's the website. I've got some handouts I'll be happy to leave for people about that. But it's a huge movement in our community to bring these classes out to people and teach people that, first of all, aging is not a disease.
Yeah.
It's a period of growth.
And that's what they call the biomedicalization of aging. I talked about this with these guys. That historical gerontology has focused on declines, what goes wrong with aging. And then there's critical theory, which looks at what can possibly go right with aging. It's not happy gerontology.
No, no,
we're not denying the realities of aging.
But you have a lot of highly motivated people.
We're opening up into development.
I went through this with my parents. They both died at the age of 86, and they had dementia. And so at the age of 63, I'm highly motivated not to get dementia, and I took these classes and found out, oh, I don't have to get dementia. And I also found out what to do about flexibility and balance so that I can stay living in my home. So that is a huge, huge part of it, and socialization is a big part of it, too. So that's one part. The second resource I'd like to bring to the group is called Villages Clark County. I like to say it takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a village to age in place. So this is part of the national movement for people aging in place. It's volunteers, boomers and seniors who are coming together. We're just starting to plan this now and figure out what resources do we need that will keep us staying in our homes.
Now this is like a Beacon's online.
It's based on Beacon Hill. There's 300 of these around the U.S. There's 300 that are open, 180 that are being planned. There's 8 in Portland, and there's this one that's starting here in Clark County. And I encourage anybody who's interested to come join us, and let's start this. It takes 3 years to plan a village, but we want to be able to bring resources and bring things into our homes. For example, assisted living in Clark County. Everybody in here knows it's $5,000 a month. That's $60,000 a year. That's for one person. I have no idea how in 20 years my husband and I are supposed to have more money than to move into an assisted living facility. It's just an unsustainable model. How about if we bring some of these services to our home at a few hundred dollars a year? And this is what this model is based on. And so I've got flyers. I'll be happy to give them to anyone else that has all contact information. Our next planning meeting is April 9th here at the library downtown. And it's a great group to get involved in.
This is fantastic. I'd like to write about this, actually, what you're doing here. That is fantastic. Wow. Congratulations. Thank you.
Other questions? Yeah, there's one back there.
Yeah, I just wanted to know the book by Atul Gawande, Being Mortal, addresses some of what you're talking about, how we have over-medicalized the care of the elderly. We're more concerned about their safety than their living. And I'm just wondering if you would comment. I think that's a must-read for every person. Because
is everybody familiar with that book?
No.
It was a New York Times bestseller. Could you give the title again?
Yes, it's Being Mortal, M-O-R-T-A-L, by Dr. Atul, A-T-U-L, Gawande, G-A-W-A-N-D-E. And it's about, we are mortal human beings, in the context of how we need to change this medicalization of aging.
And another issue with all this is, you know, when we see patients now, clinically, it's not uncommon to see a comorbidity list of double digits. Between two baby boomers a while back, I saw 66 separate comorbidities. One had 44, the other one had 22. Comorbidities are diabetes, obesity, those sorts of things. So the thing is with disease states now, remember they used to call pneumonia the old man's friend? If you got pneumonia 200 years ago, you were dead in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Well, now we don't cure these, we just manage them over long periods of time at a really costly rate. I'm going to say something a little controversial here. Not Donald Trump controversial, but controversial. When I worked in intensive care, many times there's something called spend down, and it happens to widows in particular. They're trying to keep somebody alive on supportive care. And many times we were just prolonging death. We weren't really saving anybody. And sometimes that's appropriate to get people there and that sort of thing. But I think there's a little bit of a moral obligation to the generations coming up behind us to not use up resources. And I think all of us have a moral obligation. I would say you take the time to be healthy, or you're going to have to take the time to be sick, which you want to do. One's real empowering, one's very disempowering. I don't know if that addressed what you were saying, but I think that's one of the hazards, that we're not curing any of this stuff, we're just living longer with chronic disease, and that really ties into aging in place. It makes it more of a struggle to stay in your home. So if you want independence, take care of your health, that's number one. Your body needs to be available to do what you want to do in life.
Yeah, I'm a community health nurse specialist.
Oh, well, then you know.
I know exactly, but I just...
Yeah, you're in the community, you're in the trenches.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah.
Jackie, there's a question up here.
I just want to ask, regarding mental health issues in aging and aging in place, and that's a big topic, so can you speak to maybe a couple thoughts on that? Maybe the Village model is one of those, but just wanted to get your thoughts.
On mental illness and aging in place. That's something I need to address more, actually. And I'm glad you asked that, because it's an area where I need more. I need to get up to speed more on. We see so many people on the streets now. Younger people, but particularly older people. I wrote a report a while back called Bag Lady Fears, and it gave statistics about how many women in middle age, even if they're making a lot of money, they have this fear of becoming a bag lady. And a lot of that is due to mental illness. Of course, early diagnosis, and it falls through the cracks too often, and then they do end up homeless and they have no place to age in place. So I need to get up to speed on this. And you're involved in this more, or?
Not professionally.
Not professionally, okay. Because you got a weak spot of my end. Sorry, I wish I had more to say on that one. And there's just so much fear about becoming a bad lady and the schizophrenia and all this. But that gets to the point where people aren't safe at home. They can't live in their house.
Patrick, could you say you have a term that I just love, possibility aging, especially around Mavis. Could you really quickly tell that story?
Okay. Everybody has a story of why they got into gerontology. I did grow up in the porch of a nursing home in Astoria when I was an infant. I think that imprinted me, but every year I would volunteer. I did cardiotherapy at the YMCA in Portland for 10 years. And because of that, I was a volunteer at Portland Marathon. And in 1992, I was at Portland Marathon. I was volunteering at the medical station out in front of the University of Portland. And this was at the 18-mile mark, meaning whoever had gone that far had gone 18 miles. So late in the day, I get this call on the EMS services that there's an elderly woman down at the 18-mile mark, and keep an eye out for her. And I was younger at the time, I told Bill this, so I was thinking, elderly, like 50? Because when I was in critical care, the only elderly people I saw were a sample bias. They were really sick. And so I thought aging was a disease. So I waited and waited, didn't hear anybody, didn't see anybody get close to that description. This is later in the day, so there's a trickle of runners. So I told the other people, I'm going to run upstream and see what's going on here. Because there was a water station right around the corner. So I hooked on my first aid belt. And I ran up, and as I turned the corner, I looked up, and what I saw just shocked me. There was a young woman leaning over and attending this really old woman. And if you can imagine this, think of Mother Teresa. Think of Mother Teresa in running shorts. That's what this little lady looked like. And I approached her, and the young woman started to tell me what happened. She had gotten mixed up at the water station, got knocked over, and she hit the curb. Broke, I tell her ankle, her wrist was broken, swelling, and she had a contusion on her head. And I'm doing triage, and I'm breaking an ice bag, and she's about this tall. And I'm looking down at her, and I'm looking up at this woman, and I'm going, this is crazy. And she has the number 85 on. So I lean over and I start to introduce myself, and the first thing she says to me, don't build this, she looked up and she said, young man, I was young then, she said, I'm going to finish this race. And I looked at her and I said, finish this race? And I said, just let me get you to the first aid station. That was my plan. So I held up her wrist, I put the ice pack on, and we start to take off to the first aid station. And I look down and I tell Bill, this just came out of my mouth. I said, how old are you? I was like, disgusted. And she said, I'm 85. Every year my number is my age. And I said, what do you mean every year? Mavis Lindgren didn't run her first marathon until she was 72 years old. That's when she was raised in Manitoba, Canada. Women didn't do that sort of thing. She was a nurse, got pneumonia 3 times in 1 year, and said, this antibiotics is not cutting it for me. I need to do something else. So she started a walking program with her church ladies in the morning. And she was so socially aware that that was not the thing to do, that they'd have their dresses on and they'd walk. And then when the rest of the ladies would disperse, she'd go out in the country and train. And cars would go by, she'd stop and she'd walk. And they say, hey, do you need a ride? No, I'm fine. They take off and she'd go running again. So she ran her first marathon. Her son's an ENT physician downtown here, Vancouver, Kelly Lindgren. And so after we finished, right, I'm holding up her wrist and she's not going to quit. So I pass the first aid station and they're just waving like this and I'm going. So we cross the finish line. All these cameras are there, Channel 2 and all these people. And I'm just standing right off camera holding up her wrist and they're interviewing her. And they said, what happened? And she said, oh, I fell and hit my head, didn't hurt a bit. And I'm just taking all this in. I go home and I'm just blown away by this. The next day, the organizer for the Portland Marathon, Les Smith, calls me up. Traced me down, called me up. And he said, she's running royalty. This cannot happen. Would you be willing to run with her the entire course for however long she wants to run? And I said, I would be honored. So every year I would get up at 4 o'clock. We would start at 5 o'clock in the morning downtown Portland so she could finish with everybody. People would see my t-shirt. They say, what was your time last year? And I'd say, 6.5 hours. And they said, no, you look like you could run faster. I said, wait a minute, the person I'm running was 88. She ran 85 to 90. We ran 5 marathons together. And her 90th marathon was her last marathon. I'm sure it was. Her family was tied into Nike. She had a relative that donated $5,000 in the old days to a young kid who had an idea for a shoe company in Eugene. That's the best $5,000 investment you ever made. Phil Knight would sponsor her to run around the world. She'd run with me in the Portland Marathon, and then a month later she'd go run with Fred Lebel, the organizer of the New York Marathon. He was right still in New York. On her 90th birthday, we ran the marathon. Phil and I brought her a pair of Air Mavis running shoes for her name of Mavis. And she retired at 90. That was her 75th marathon. So the message there is the old message about it's never too late to become what you might have been. And that's how I got into gerontology and this whole idea of critical gerontology. Because I thought, if it's possible for Mavis, it's possible for the rest of us. Yeah. So that was, thanks for asking that.
Oh, that's fabulous.
No, I love that. She died at 94. She aspirated and passed away. And it's something that we call compressing morbidity. You want to die at the very end of your life with some come to some kind of disease process, but be healthy all up until then. She did it perfectly.
Question back here. What a great story.
Let's change the subject. I'm looking at your handout, and there's this 8 element about aging. Situation since more than one has something to do with the builder or developer, real estate kind of professional, and I always purchase one level houses. That's smart. My frustration is, I'm not able to widen the hallway or put a five foot diameter for a wheelchair for the bathroom, so my suggestion right now may not be correct, but for the building code department, when they approve the housing design, they should require one bathroom
absolutely.
On the first floor.
Absolutely.
That will be
this is in the policy. That's a very good point.
Suitable for
yes.
Wheelchair
yes.
situation,
that's
and also the hallway is wide enough.
Yes,
right
that's
now,
good.
I cannot widen the bathroom.
You brought up a very good point.
And that's doable. It's not a big deal.
There's people I know that work in the field of universal design that are trying to get this into policy and codes. Because, you know, a universal design house, it's just easier for everybody to live in. You know, if you've got, remember the old ranch-style houses? Man, those are coming back. Wide open spaces, wide doorways, not a lot of walls, one level. It's called visitability. You know, if you got a non-barrier entrance to the house, at least one, you've got a bathroom on the main floor, which is another thing that's kind of getting hard to find as well. And the doorways are 34, 36 inches. If you got those three things, that goes a long ways. But yes, we need policy for that. And we want to make the stuff, universal design stuff, beautiful. So it's I called it turning obstacles into beauty. Michael Graves was doing that. You know, so it's non-stigmatizing, it's invisible, or it's beautiful, easier to live in.
Utilities, so later on we can modify.
Yes. And you know, right now those may not be a selling item, but in the future, I guarantee they are. By the way, if there's any entrepreneurs in here, with 70% of baby boomers living in the suburbs, we're going to need goods and services going to the suburbs. That is a huge opportunity for some entrepreneurs. Huge opportunity. It's tremendous. We haven't even talked about technology, which you're going to talk about at some point. We do the raffle. Okay.
Oh, does anybody have a ticket? Did you get a chance to put a ticket in? There's $100 worth of universal design items there, so.
As a babysitter, I'd like you to speak about your mind. As you know, we will never get old.
Yeah.
Richard Duncan, who is a very famous universal design specialist, we just talked to each other on Twitter, and he was asking this very question: how do we overcome the barriers to adoption? And I said, Richard, we have to overcome gerontophobia, the fear of aging. And he said, wow, I'm going to use that. But that's the problem, that's the fear of aging. And we're, you know, look on the cover of AARP magazine now, you got Kevin Costner. They're trying to do that. It's a hard sell because we live in a youth culture, of course. But I think making these things beautiful, universal design products beautiful, so they're the first choice, not a second choice, not a crisis buy. And just changing the way we feel about aging in particular. A lot of us saw our parents age and we didn't like the way they were aging. And it didn't necessarily have to go that way. As I said, many things blame on aging. Really have to do.
We've been working very hard getting old. So that's why not enjoy it.
And the other thing is, it's denied to many.
Yes.
So,
Patrick, you mentioned services to the suburbs and so forth. Yes. I'm concerned about the population that's not going to be able to buy those services.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to have a population of pretty good size without the funds necessary to take care of themselves during their aging period.
Yeah, that's a big problem, Bob. I'm hoping it could be an economies of scale thing, and I like what you guys are doing. There's somebody I want to suggest speak for your technology, Claude Goodman, as a tech expert, and I'd love him to be able to present. But he is really very much involved in time banking. People have time. Remember what we talked about? I think having purpose is your best anti-aging pill out there, so to speak. What we talked about in South Florida, I worked in a trauma center in South Florida, and I saw what happened to people who retire from something to nothing, and they take on sick careers. You know, you try to get together with them on Tuesday, I gotta go to the doctor. Well, how about Wednesday? I gotta pick up my pills. Friday, I've got physical therapy, and they're so busy being sick that they take on these sick careers, and that's the way that they find meaning in their lives now. We see them in the hospital all the time.
Good.
And that's not a good retirement plan, and I think there's a moral obligation there as well. Not take on, if you're sick, you're sick. Get, you know, take care of it. But if find volunteerism or a purpose beyond yourself. That's the best pill there is.
Okay, what's your apple?
Okay. I'm having him pick so you can blame him. Okay, ticket number 377626. There she goes.
Thank you very much.
And if you want to get a hold of me, please contact me through the website, asianplace.com. I'd be happy to talk to any of you. And if you have ideas or something you want to share, personal stories or feedback on the talk or whatever, because I'm in the neighborhood. I live on 39th Street. I'm real close. So thank you very much for coming.
Okay, we have a few other business items here that we need to take care of. If I can find my agenda, I think it'll make it easier. Thank you. We sent the sodium reduction community grant support letter. So that's just a statement that was sent. There was a grant out there being written, and we want to be as a group that is in favor of a grant that is helping to deal with sodium intake in various senior centers and places where larger groups of seniors gather. And they're finding ways also to change flavor profile by enhancing with herbs and other things to still get the flavor in. So we sent that letter. Andy Silver is going to be our speaker next time on April 19th, What Housing Options Would Best Serve Young and Old Alike. Andy is the head of the Council for the Homeless here in Clark County, is doing an amazing job with that and is a wealth of information. And so I would strongly encourage you to be here and bring a friend. And the Commission on Aging will have at least 2 open positions starting in June. And there will be an announcement. It may already have gone out, actually. I think it has. If you have a desire to serve on this commission, we're looking for people to give us resumes, and we'll replace a couple of people with new ones on the commission. So is there anything else people need to bring up for new business? Oh, one other thing. You have a motion, Chuck.
I would like to make a motion that we develop a exploratory group, I guess I would call it, to look into a 501(c)(3).
C3.
C3. Uh-huh. Okay. 501(c)(3). Mm-hmm. For our group. As
okay.
far
for
as
that or a foundation.
For the and or a foundation.
One second?
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We'll do it. Is there anything else? Anybody? Then this meeting is adjourned. Thanks for coming. And Patrick will be up here if you have other questions. The real questions, not now. Good meeting, Bob.
Wow, on the bar.
That's
Greatest.
Yeah.
He has to tell that story.